Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome back to another edition of the Holtcast. Cole Petum here, as always, and of course, we're here to talk all things Aston Villa Football Club with a 3-1 home win at Villa Park, of course, against Crystal Palace on Saturday. Hopefully everyone had a fantastic weekend and you're hearing this bright and early on a Monday, a Tuesday, or whenever you are listening. It's always appreciated. Like I always say, I should do this more, and I do this probably once every 3 months. But of course, if you're new to listening to this podcast, of course, whether it's Acast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, you know what? Subscribe, follow, leave a positive review. It's always appreciated. Just makes it easier for others to follow me. I've actually made notes this time, so maybe that's why, because I actually made note of that. But regardless of me having a lack of preparation for 90% of these podcasts, it's not just me here myself. We do have Mr. Simon O'Regan and downstairs a barking dog. So I do apologize for that. But Simon, how's it going for you?
Yeah, not too bad, thank you. I'm just taken aback to hear that you've made notes. That's not what we do on this, is it?
No, it's really not. But last night I was watching Match of the Day at like 11 p.m. here on my phone while everyone else is asleep. And I thought, you know what? I'm watching replays and really getting into this analysis. So why not take some of the credit that other people have put out, make them into some notes, and maybe it'll actually make sense for one. So let's see how far we get with this one. But anyways, like I said, of course, Aston Villa 3, Crystal Palace 1. I mean, it was never in doubt, was it, Simon? It was always going to be 3-1, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was looking unlikely as the game was wearing on. I mean, to be fair, we probably should have been at least 3-0 up at halftime, if we're being brutally honest. It was one of those, when Watkins had the shot off the post in the second half and it hits Johnson's head and bounces out for corner, at that stage, me and my brother turned to each other and went, oh God, we're not going to score today, are we? But little did we know, this is a different Aston Villa. We've been saying it for a while under Emery. It's not what we're used to, is it?
No, it's kind of weird to actually see Villa come from behind in a game and actually thrive doing so. And I always felt like ever since really Palace scored, they were happy the whole game to give Villa possession. That was evident. And we've seen Villa under different management, whether it's Dean Smith, the other guy in between, or previous to that, where we've had spells of possession, but so slow and there's really no urgency and we're really not doing much with it. And I mean, it's kind of harsh, in my opinion, for what I've seen on social media, because, you know, everyone on social media makes sense and isn't reactionary. I say that with just a lot of humor in that and sarcasm. But to really say that we weren't clinical in moments, I mean, Matty Cash could have had a couple. Zaniolo could have had Zaniolo, sorry. I don't know why I always want to call him whatever I call him. But anyways, he could have had an assist. We'll get into his performance a little bit later. Like Watkins hitting the post, like you suggested. I mean, there was opportunities. It just felt like it was not going to go in. And I always felt like the later it was going on, it was going to take something special. And of course, it was something special because Jean Durand turned into prime Benteke, hits it on the half volley, literally sends Sam Johnston all the way back to the baggies. It was one hell of a goal, wasn't it?
Oh, it's unbelievable. I mean, it took a while for him to sort of settle in. I think he got like a bit of an injury last season as well. But his sort of goals to minutes ratio has been very impressive this season. And that goal was unbelievable. He'd almost had like an early sighter maybe 10 minutes before when I think Dougie knocked it down to him and he didn't quite catch it with his left foot on the edge of the area, but that goal, just pure composure with that goal. I mean, so many people at that stage may have sort of panicked and gone for goal straight away with their head from that position, or maybe tried to nod it down. But to have the presence of mind to take the touch on the chest, and it was a brilliant touch as well. But it was how quickly he hit the ball. Like that ball, it seemed like it hadn't, I mean, it did bounce and it was rising, but it almost seemed like it was that quick that he hit it before it even bounced. And I think when you look at it, you know, the ball's, it's not flown off into the top corner. It's gone straight into the middle of the goal, basically. But I think he's just hit it that quickly with that much power that the keeper's got no chance. And yeah, like you said there, it kind of reminds you of that Benteke goal. I think it was against Norwich a good few years ago. And you kind of, me and my brother, when we were chatting, even before he'd scored that goal, like we kind of like says, there's shades of Benteke in Duran that you can see. And you kind of, because he's so big and powerful as well, it's always easy to forget that he's still only 19. Like he's very, very raw, very young. And you can see that he's raw. You know, there are mistakes that he makes and things that he doesn't quite get. But there's so much potential there. And that goal, it was just such a great strike, and really, really pleased for him because, you know, obviously there's a lot of talk about should we have sold Cameron Archer, should we have got someone else in, and you know that I do still think that we maybe have left ourselves a little bit light, but he's starting to show signs that okay, there is an alternative to Watkins now. You know, there is another. We can put two of them up front. We could put him with Diaby playing off to him. Like there's signs that there is another option for us. And he'll probably get more game time in sort of the Conference League games and Carabao Cup games, which will bring his developers on even more. So, yeah, really pleased. But like you said as well, it was getting to the stage where we needed something special to get us back into that game. And you look at those chances missed in that first half.
Well, it just kind of felt like typical Villa, didn't it? And of course, we're not going in any chronological order here because, of course, Crystal Palace did score in the 47th minute, Mateta. A lot can be desired from that. Defensive lapses, lack of coverage, Emi Martinez slipping. I mean, it was just kind of Villa of old summed up in one move, really. But really, Simon, when you look at that, it's. I want to give Palace a little bit of credit because they clearly came with a game plan. Of course, Roy Hodgson wasn't there through illness, of course, so hopefully he's feeling better soon. I did see weird things on social media where apparently a couple of Crystal Palace outlets kind of broke that and people lost their minds about them wishing him better health. I don't know. Anyways, that's just social media for you now. You get jumped on for being nice. But regardless of that, they came with a game plan. It was clear and evident, and it was working. But I mean, once that goal goes in, like we said, we thought it needed something special in that game to really break through. But were you just getting kind of shades of old Villa at that point? Did you think, oh, here we go again, kind of thing? Or was it ever maybe, was there even a sliver in your mind thinking, okay, well, there's still something in this. We can pull this one back because our record from pulling things back is not good.
Yeah, well, I mean, because the first half, we should have, the game should have been wrapped up at half time, really.
Yeah.
So we kind of, like me and the lads, we're trying at half time, like going, there's not really an awful lot wrong with what we've done. You know, we've just not been clinical. So obviously, when they score so early on in the second half, my immediate theory, like thinking, wasn't our, you know, this typical old Villa. I kind of thought, well, the game's not really going to change. They've sat for draw from kickoff, so they're not going to change the way they play. We're not going to change the way we play. So at that stage, you know, obviously you're frustrated going 1-0 down, but you're thinking, okay, we really do need to start making the most of these chances. But initially, I kind of thought, oh well, you know, it'll be all right. The game's just going to go as it has been. But as that second half went on, I think Emery kind of referenced it as well. We kind of lost a bit of structure, and you know, Palace then had maybe two really decent chances to try and finish that game off. I think Eze in particular has there's the first one that he had where I think he just took a heavy touch and Martinez came out and got to the ball. But there was one where I think Decore slips and like chips in through, and he tried to lob it over Martinez. So they got more chances on the counter than they'd had in the first half. But we kind of, I don't know, it was a weird one, the way the second half went on. Like I initially, when the first subs were made, when Tielemans and Bailey were brought on, I didn't quite understand why that's happened. I don't think for about 10, 15 minutes or so after those subs were made, it didn't, to me, it didn't look like it was really working. And it looked like we'd moved Diaby from a central position out to the wing. And I kind of think that that didn't really suit him either. And we lost our way a little bit. But what I did quite like as well, and I was saying it to my brother afterwards, that, and like, I'll caveat this with saying that we're clearly not on the level of Man City. But when City, if say Man City are losing a game and there's 10 minutes to go, they don't change the way they play. They don't start just whacking it long and, just come, aimless long balls trying to pepper the goal. They stick to how they play, building out slow, controlled possession. And to be fair, we did do that. And it was frustrating at times because, you're getting into the last 10 minutes, you're 1-0 down, and you kind of, it's that football fan instinct in you think, oh, just get it up there, just get it in the box. But I do quite like the fact that they actually did try and stay playing the way that Emery wants us to play. And eventually, we took that moment of magic from Duran to obviously get the equaliser. But once that happened, we kind of, it was like it clicked back into gear again. And it was like, okay, right, we can smell blood. We know there's a win here. And then the way that we do play, passing it out, playing through the lines, it paid dividends in the end. But yeah, there was like a 15, 20-minute period after they scored where it did kind of think, oh God, what's happening?
Well, I mean, it would be typical Villa to feel like that. If we didn't feel like that, it'd be very odd. But you are right in saying that. I mean, how many times have Villa been trying to claw back in a game from for as far as I can remember? Of course, you can remember that much longer with your long aging wisdom. But regardless of that, I'm glad I clawed that back because I was going to screw it up even more. But regardless, you do sit back and you think, okay, what are we going to do from probably like 75, 80 on? And typically it would just be swing into the box and maybe you get a glancing header. Maybe one goes wide and you think that was the moment, but 90% of the other efforts are nothing or it doesn't even make it into the box. And it's just frustrating. And I can kind of empathize with some people in terms of why it's frustrating to see us doing the same thing. Now, to get to the substitutions, it is kind of hindsight is a beautiful thing because as soon as Tielemans came on, I thought he wasn't really that impressive for the first 10, 15 minutes, to be honest. A few wayward passes looked kind of out of pace, looked like he really didn't fit into the system at that moment. But as football fans, what do we know? Because, of course, out of those substitutions that were made, out of the four, of course, two of them end up scoring. So what do we really know? Of course, Leon Bailey coming on the 57th minute, scoring the third goal. Tielemans coming on, of course, replacing Kamara. I mean, let's talk about that for a minute, Simon. I mean, what did you make of that change in particular? I didn't think Kamara really had that great of a game, and I feel like he's kind of been going through a little bit of a slump lately. I don't know. It just he hasn't seemed to me as tidy on the ball as he was last season. Maybe he's still kind of getting into that form. It is early days this season. But kind of with that substitution, it is a major one to kind of make because he is a statement player in that midfield.
Yeah, he. I think now it wasn't. If that was a substitution that was made like at this stage last season, I would agree that I'd be quite surprised with it. I think now, if you've got a choice of Kamara or Luiz to take off, you're not taking Douglas Luiz off that pitch, are you? Like,
Exactly.
and I think Kamara, it was an interesting position that he was playing yesterday, because I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but it looked like he kind of quite often was dropping back to almost make a back three with Matty Cash bombing forward. So it was a bit of a different position for him, really. And I think it's one of a player like Kamara against a team like Crystal Palace, the way they played yesterday. It's going to be difficult for them to stand out as having a good game because they're not really going to have an awful lot to do in terms of what his strengths are, breaking up play, intercepting passes, breaking up the opposition attacks. Because Palace just had zero interest in entering our half of the field for the majority of that game. So it was, and I think it kind of Emery probably recognised that, which is why Cash was allowed to go forward so much and have Kamara sort of drop back in there. So I get where you're coming from when you kind of say that you maybe you didn't think he had the best game, but I don't. It was one of those games where he's always going to struggle to stand out in a way. And I think once we went 1-0 down and you've got to make a positive change, for me, then it kind of made sense. If you're going to bring a midfielder off, you may as well bring the one who's going to, he's basically been playing as a back three and bring Tielemans on. So you kind of, I agree with you. I don't think Tielemans had the greatest first 10, 15 minutes of that game. But I mean, he certainly made up for it with two key passes in stoppage time, didn't he?
Well, it just kind of came out of nowhere. I kind of felt like this substitution kind of even initially slowed Villa's play down even more. Tielemans isn't known for pace, of course, and in that position in that game, you're pinned in Palace's half, so it's not like you're running around frantically regardless anyways. So, like, even with that substitution, I do get it in hindsight. It does make sense, and you are right with Kamara too, of course. I think the thing with him that we didn't see yesterday is those splitting passes on the defensive line or anything like that. I think that's the one thing that was missing. And when you see Dougie Louise intercepting the ball in the odd kind of situation as well, that probably takes the limelight even further away from Kamara as well. But kind of moving on a little swiftly, I guess, from that and making myself not look too wrong, let's go to Pau Torres for a second because I do think it's really unjustified for. I know he's basically been on the pitch for or caused, what am I trying to say here? Some people want to say he's caused a goal every game, essentially, or something that has led to that from his side. I mean, yesterday, I guess you could make that evidence, but the fact that I can't remember the exact stat, but he basically had, I think, what was it, like half the amount of passes that the entire Crystal Palace team had yesterday. Like when your defender is doing that, Simon, you know he's doing a good job. I think for me, and let me know what you think, I just feel like we're not insulating him well enough. I think he just needs that protection. I don't really think Lucas Digne provides that on the left. And at times, I still feel like we're trying to. I mean, of course, when we're playing a different back three again from the last game, too, that's going to throw him off as well. And that's not going to be a fully cohesive back line, too. So becoming a two with, like we said, with Kamara kind of becoming a three at times. What did you make of his performance? And do you think there's anything in that? Or do you think it's maybe just him needing more time from a defensive perspective coping with the Premier League?
I actually think, and this may sound silly, but like the goal aside, I actually thought he had a really, really good game yesterday.
Exactly. Yeah.
I thought, like, not just with his passing. Like, there was another stat where I saw he made more passes into the opposition final third yesterday than any player has in any Premier League game this season, which was like mad when I read that. But not just from that point, I thought defensively. And he read the I thought he read the game really well, like made a lot of good interceptions, nicking the ball off people. The goal itself, it wasn't, I've seen him get like a lot of criticism online for it, and he did make a mistake for it, but so did Lucas Digne, so did Conte, so did Martinez. There was four players that were wrong with
Exactly.
that. Digne was way too high up the pitch. Torres does get turned too easily. Konsa doesn't come across, and Martinez has unfortunately slipped. So, it was a number of people who made the mistakes. I think, and look, we all know, the players should know now that Torres, he's not as physically imposing as Mings, Konsa or Carlos. That is an area of weakness in his game, and he's not as quick as them either. So you need to accommodate for that. And you're not saying that you have to like massively protect someone, but every single player has strengths and every single player has weaknesses, and you've got to set up your team to, accentuate the strengths and try and combat the weaknesses as much as you can. And I think I would suspect, I mean, obviously Lucas Digne has had a good start to the season, but I would say that once you see Moreno probably alongside Torres at left back, because he is so quick, that would maybe sort of make up for any sort of areas of weakness down that side of it. But I thought Torres had a pretty decent game. I think what fans have got to remember, and I think especially in the sort of the age we are in now with social media, with everything being so reactionary and everything, is that people expect players to come in and hit the ground running. And Moreno, when he I remember when Moreno first came, first five, six games, you go online after the game and you'd have people go, "Oh, what we've bought him for? What's the point in that? You can see why he was only 9 million." Like, just do you know what I mean? Just constant shit like that. And players, some especially coming from a foreign league, sometimes they'll hit the ground running like Diaby has done. Sometimes it could take 6 months. I remember going back a good old while. Juan Pablo Angel, when he joined Villa, it took him 6, 7 months before he really adapted. I remember Arsene Wenger years and years ago once talking about like when you sign players from foreign leagues, that it can take some players up to 12 months to adapt. I remember Dennis Bergkamp and Thierry Henry didn't hit the ground running straight away. Leroy Sané, when he joined Man City, took him about a year to adapt. Like, he's come. Torres has come from a league where it's nowhere near as physical. In terms of the strikers that you come up against, there's going to be a period of adaptation, which has been. He's kind of been thrust into it because of the Mings injury as well. I'm fairly sure had Mings not got that injury, Pau Torres would not have started the amount of games that he started in the Premier League. He probably would have started definitely two games against Hibs and maybe one or two Premier League games, but he's kind of been thrust into it and having to adapt a bit quicker. But as I say, I thought he had a good game yesterday.
Yeah, I did as well. I think it's, I mean, when we're really going to probably appreciate his quality is probably in the Conference League when he makes more passes than the opposing team we're playing probably very soon. I would not be shocked to see that stat out there because it's probably going to happen. So we might as well speak that into existence now. I don't know. Like you've said there, I feel like from a defensive standpoint, and I know we've always said this, but just in a world where Tyrone Mings doesn't get hurt, I don't think we concede some of these goals. I think that, of course, I don't think he plays as much, but even if he does, and he is part of back three with, say, Konsa, Mings, and then Pau Torres, however you want to work that one out, I think he's shielded a lot more because Mings brings those defensive qualities that we're currently missing on the left. I mean, the other thing too, which is kind of funny because we've probably beaten this like a dead horse at this point, but Lucas Digne can't defend. His awareness is like there was one instance, I think, in the second half, right after they scored, where they broke again. And I mean, I think it was massively lucky. I can't remember who was putting in the low cross, but instead of like running at the player breaking down on the left, he like ran like 15 feet. Even like wider than he should have. Eventually, it hit him in the face and it went out for a corner or something like that. But I thought, like, you are so lucky if he would have put that an inch higher. Like, it is terrifying. He gets an assist, so it pads the performance a little bit. But all I can say is, I cannot wait to see Alex Moreno back because I think we are, and I hope he's the same player when he does come back because I think we are massively missing something down the left, more consistency base. I mean, getting the odd assist or group of assists here or there is great for a left back, but if that's your main objective as a left back, it's a little terrifying at times. Because I mean, I'm not trying to be discouraging towards Lucas Digne, but him playing Man City scares the hell out of me.
Well, this is it. I think it depends very much on your opposition. Like, to be fair, like the game yesterday, a team like Crystal Palace who are going to sit in deep and not leave much space in behind, you're probably going to get more from Lucas Digne than Moreno, because Digne is very good at he's a very good cross of the ball, but very good like crossing from deep as well. Where the team you're playing, a team that's just going to sit back and not leave much space, then your crossing angles are more likely coming in from a deeper position. Whereas against a Man City or a team that's at least going to come out and have a go at you, then Moreno is obviously clearly a much better option because of his pace and because of his ability getting in behind and taking people on. But I mean, I think I agree with you. For me, if they're both fit, Moreno starts. Obviously, like I think he's so important to the way we want to play. But I do think there is a time and place for Luka Dean in certain games. Like you look at like when we play Tibbs, for example, especially like that first leg, and we're you're gonna come up against poor teams like that in the Conference League. They're the games where you can maybe rest Moreno and say to Luka Dean, God, just whip a few balls in against these lot.
Absolutely. Well, now, Simon, humor me for a second because I'm going to throw this your way. Niccolò Zaniolo, pronounced it right this time. Do you think he's a slightly less chaotic Captain Chaos than Captain Chaos himself? Because he does give me those vibes, just like a taller Italian, less chaotic Captain Chaos. But let me know your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I thought he had a decent enough game yesterday. I think in the first half, maybe I think there were times when he's just trying to impress a bit too much. Like there's some fancy little flicks that he does, which I don't mind in the opposition half. I wouldn't be doing them 20, 30 yards out from your own goal and hoping that Luka Dean's defensively aware enough to be in the position to get on the end of it. I'm not sure if I quite like that, but he almost got himself the one of the assists of the season with that little turn on the wing and when he laid off to Matty Cash, who decided not to have a left foot. But no, I thought Zaniolo had a decent enough guy. I think he'll do him the world of good having had get 60 minutes under his belt, and I think he'll now have 60 minutes for Emery to sort of analyse and sort of talking through his performance, which I think would be beneficial. But yeah, no, I think he. Yeah, I get what you mean in terms of like a slightly less chaotic Captain Chaos. Like you look at him and you think he could be quite fun to watch, but could be infuriating, but maybe not as infuriating as the captain himself.
For listeners, by the way, Captain Chaos is Bergen Traoré, just in case no one's ever caught on to that we probably referenced that a million times. But no, you are right. I thought he was very impressive. I think a lot of people kind of jumped on his back when he didn't put Watkins or Diaby through. But I also feel like from his perspective, you can tell he wants to score. He wants to get that off his back to show he can do that. And then, of course, shortly after that, then we did see him kind of open up. But the people kind of then seeing him not make these opportunities for other players, which again, he set up Cash, but apparently Matty Cash left his shooting boots and his two goal performance the other week. So it is what it is there. I don't know. When you see the likes of Watkins and Diaby throwing their hands up in the air, I don't really read anything into it. It's frustration, but that's a good thing. If they weren't, I'd be even more concerned. But it really, like when you sit back and you look at his performance, I don't think he can't play in the conference league, can he? Until the
No, we can, yeah.
oh, he can. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure if it was the knockout rounds or if it was just for the qualifiers. He couldn't.
No, it was just those qualifiers, but no, he's available for the group stage now.
Where do you, getting away from this game for just 2 seconds, where do you think he features more? Premier League or in the conference league? Because to be honest, I feel like he's probably going to be a starter in Poland.
Yeah, I'd say probably initially those cup games with the Conference League, and obviously we've got Everton in the Carabao Cup, I think next in a couple of weeks, something 10 days, something like that. So yeah, I'd say yeah that he'll probably get a few starts in those games as well, just to sort of ease him into playing in the first 11, then, and then that's sort of the springboard to keep his place in the Premier League team.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it is kind of weird to see, well, first of all, an Italian at Villa Park playing for Villa. Has there even ever been an Italian that I can think of? Can you think of one?
We've had a yeah, we had I think we've only had three or four in the Premier League, or maybe not even the Premier League, because one of them was we had Gallini in
Oh,
goal for like
yeah,
4 or 5 months,
correct.
and then we had a year. I mean, this is probably before your time. We had Benito Carboni on loan for a season back in 2000s.
Yeah, I was six, so to be honest.
Yeah.
that was in the least of my concerns at that time in my life, but I can't believe I forgot Gallini.
I mean, it's easy to see why.
Who do you think? I mean, this has nothing to do with what we're talking about. Who was a bigger flop, Gallini or who was the goalkeeper we had like the next season, the Spanish one or whatever it was? Or was he Portuguese?
Oh, not good. Moraes or Marrero, something like
Yeah.
that.
Who was worse in your eyes?
Bloody hell. Toss of the coin, that one, isn't it? They join a long list of crap goalkeepers we've had over the years.
Well, to be fair with Gallini, as soon as I saw when he moved to Spurs originally, I thought, oh, is he actually good now? And no.
No,
They took a punt and in the punt missed the field goal. There's
yeah.
an NFL reference, I guess. It is Sunday we're recording, so fair enough for that. Simon, Ollie Watkins. I mean,
Yes.
I can see the concern. I asked people for their first half performances when I was doing the Twitter coverage on the 7500 to Holt web or Twitter page, I should say. A lot of people saying he's shit. We don't have a striker. Massively reactionary, correct?
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Yes, he's not. He's clearly not shit. Funny enough, on the train into the game, there was a couple of lads sat behind me, and I really had to. So I really struggled to bite my tongue and not turn around and tell them to where to go because they were absolutely slagging Watkins off. And for me, look, I don't think he started the season well. I'm going to be honest. I know the hat trick against Hibs aside. I don't think he's played well in many of the games I've seen. And he's just going through a bad patch of form at the moment. I think one of the issues is that, well, certainly up until maybe yesterday, obviously, people are starting to get a bit more excited about Duran now. But before then, you looked around most positions on the pitch, there's genuine competition for places. Like you've got to play well or you're out that team. There isn't really that up front. Like Watkins knows pretty much he's going to start every week. And I think that can lead to slight issues. I mean, look, we're big fans of Watkins on this podcast, and he does offer a lot of qualities. But he's missed a lot of good chances this season. Like there's no point trying to hide away from that fact. Like you looked at that one in the first half yesterday when he's gifted the ball and he's through 1-on-1. I mean that's so poor not to sit that away. And then a few minutes later, I think it was Matty Cash drilled in a cross, and he just kind of like sort of half stuck a leg out at it. And I turned to my brother at that stage and I said, look, I love Watkins. I said, if I'm being brutally honest, that's why Callum Wilson gets called up for England and Ollie Watkins doesn't. I'm saying this as a fan of him, and I think he's a really good player, and I think we would struggle to replace him with someone as good. But he's not clinical. Once he gets one goal and he goes on a streak, then he becomes bloody the most clinical striker in the world. But when he's in a drought like this, they're not even half chances. They're big chances that he misses. And that could be a problem. I'm not saying it definitely will be, but that could lead to issues as the season goes on. But I don't really know what else you can, you know, with the situation, it is what it is. There's not an awful lot you can do unless Durant now has obviously started the season well. Whenever he's come on, he's looked impressive and he's got goals. So maybe there is competition now, but he desperately needs a goal, Watkins.
Yeah, like even with the effort he had yesterday when Palace absolutely fell apart at the back. I mean, Johnston did make a good save. We have to give him that. But even when you watch it back, he had so much space. He could have taken two, three, four more touches and got a lot closer. I know that then closes down the angle a bit. I know that's the argument. But then it probably would have opened up an angle to his left as well, facing Johnston.
It was such a time shot as well, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
It was a shot of a man who looks like he's like feeding some real weight on his shoulders. That wasn't a confidence try.
You can tell he's not feeling it when you can always tell in general when strikers aren't feeling it, because in that circumstance for me, you just blast that. He's trying to place it. And that's the issue. He's trying to the difference of when to actually do and prioritize essentially how you
it's like that. It's like so focused on trying to make sure get this shot on target rather than, like you say, just fucking leather it into the back of the net. I'd rather he missed it, to be honest.
I'd rather he just smashed it and then it went like an inch over the post or something. At least that shows
have some conviction.
But I mean, that's kind of always been the thing with Watkins too. When has he ever been extremely consistent throughout an entire season? Every striker does, or your Erling Haaland as well. So if this is Watkins, hopefully, fingers crossed, getting it out of the way early, then we're laughing. Because to be honest, I thought at the start of the season, if Durant scores maybe, I'd say, 5 to 7 goals in all competitions this season, we'd be laughing. He has two in the Premier League, and does he have two in the Conference League already?
One in the Conference League.
One. I couldn't remember who scored the first leg. So, I mean, he's already at three in all competitions. He's probably going to hit at least 10, I would say. I know we talked about this earlier. It really has nothing to do with the context of the game. But if we do have another Benteke, I think we'll be very happy.
But, you know, Watkins, he wins the penalty, though, doesn't he?
He does. Let's talk about it. I mean,
it was
next on the docket anyways. If you are a Palace fan if this happened to Villa, you'd have to admit, Simon, part of you would probably feel a little bit hard done by, slightly. I do think it's a penalty, but...
I tweeted like a clip of it like last night saying like genuinely amazed by Palace fans' reaction. And it's had a few reactions to that tweet. I can tell you that. But honestly, he doesn't touch the ball until after he trips Watkins. I'm really, really struggling to see where there's any sort of debate about this. On Match of the Day last night, I mean, their analysis was pathetic, to be honest, on that game, but They all said that it was harsh, but like I've just got claret and blue tinted specs, and I'm missing something that everyone else is seeing. But as far as I'm aware, you can't slide in on someone from behind, take them out, and then kick the ball away, and that be a fair tackle. Like I really don't get it. I don't understand why the referee was told to go and have another look at it. And I mean, I thought the referee was shit yesterday. And
he took so long for that decision too. It was easily what, 5 minutes?
Yeah, easily. I'm amazed that he actually stuck to his guns on that one. But I mean, if that was against us, I'd be furious at the defender for lunging in like that in the last minute of the game in the penalty area, like. It was a stupid challenge, silly challenge to make, and he doesn't get the ball. I mean, I've seen some people trying to claim I can't see it myself, but some people are saying that he scraped the top of the ball just before he takes Watkins out and then clears the ball away. But to me, that's not winning the ball. Watkins is still in control. Watkins is still going to get his shot away until he's taken out. So it's easy to say as a Villa fan, like people say, oh, of course you're going to say that because he's gone for you. I'm really, really struggling to understand what any sort of controversy is meant to be about this. Is for me, it's as clear as say that that's a penalty.
I do agree. I think it's a penalty, but I think there's different factors. Like normally a striker probably would have noticed pressure coming on and probably pulled the ball away a little bit further because then he's going to feel the contact and go down. The other, I feel like with Watkins is sometimes he does go down like quite, not, I don't want to say quite often because strikers do that, but I feel like he has a little bit of that in him where he goes down slightly easily. A little bit. Like it wasn't, I think it's because it wasn't such a massively obvious collision. Like it wasn't an absolute bruiser and he just wiped him out. Because it was two players slightly coming together and he got the ball so quickly, I think that's what neutral and Palace fans are really clinging on to, which I understand. I mean, I've seen things like that been given against us and I'm frustrated with it, but all in all, it is a penalty. There's never been a time in the existence of football where you can just go through someone's back in the penalty area, and it's not. So fair enough. The one thing I will add on to that too, though, I mean, first of all, I think the Palace defender, was it Richards?
Yeah.
I mean, he did not have a good game, let's be honest. He almost scored on his own goal too earlier on when there was one whipped, and he had no clue where that was going as well. But I mean, do you think it was a good thing that Dougie stepped up instead of Watkins? Because I thought, okay, you can break Watkins' poor form in the Premier League now, but do you really want to risk it on a game? I kind of like that we didn't. There is ruthlessness to that where I feel like last year it would have been the opposite.
Yeah, well, I mean, like Dougie's the penalty taker now, isn't he? That's his third one this season. But I mean, there was no one else in that stadium you'd want with the ball on that spot than Douglas Luiz. I tweeted last night as well. And with each passing game, like generally, he's moving up and up the list of like my favourite players I've seen play for Villa. I think it's ridiculous how underrated he is outside of Villa Park. Like I genuinely think he's one of the best midfielders in the Premier League. He's so good. He controls games now. He's just got such a cool head. Like there was absolutely zero doubt in my mind that he wasn't going to score that penalty. And yeah, you're right. If I'd have seen them try to be kind and give Watkins a chance to get his first league goal of the season, I think I'd have had a heart attack.
Oh, he would have hit the post or something. It gives me like Grealish vibes when he'd step up for a penalty, and we're like, surely this will go in now. Unfortunately, it's just one of those. And I do like that. And like you said a while ago, during this recording session in this chat, I mean, Dougie's irreplaceable. And it's crazy now when you look back at it a year later, how he is the number one midfielder over Kamara, because it was so different when Kamara came in. And it just shows that it's nice that we've backed a player enough, given him the financial package to stay clearly and shown that belief, because it's really going to pay off. And I mean, I hope Dougie's here forever, but if he's not, that payday is going to be fantastic from a Villa point of view as well. So it's great to see Villa actually have a financial brain when it comes to transfers.
Yeah.
It's so uncomfortable, but so weird.
Talking financial brain and transfers. So a couple of weeks ago, a couple of mates of mine, like, we went to the cricket and they were stopping at mine. We're talking about the football. But this lad's a Chelsea fan. And like, I got to talk about Dougie Luiz. And this goes to show just how underrated he is outside. Like, he was asking me, if he was to be sold, how much do you reckon you get, 40, 50 million? I said, mate, Chelsea dropped 105 million on Enzo Fernandez, 115 on Caicedo, and 60 million on Lavia. if Chelsea were coming in for Dougie, I'd want 150 bare minimum before we start talking. Like, he's I think he's such a fantastic footballer, and as I say, so underrated by fans outside of Villa Park.
100%. I still think to this day now, City are probably kicking themselves that they didn't take that buyback clause, because
oh god, yeah,
Christ, he would slide right back in there with no issue.
Yeah, when you think they could have spent what it's been 30 million they'd have got him back for, and they had to spend what was it 45, 50 million on Calvin Phillips.
Yeah,
they don't say more.
We're not taking Calvin Phillips in exchange if that ever happens. That's what yeah. I can say. Let's speak that into existence too, Jesus. But anyways, let's get over to the three word reviews on Twitter. There were a few of them. I know they're not as popular these days as they used to be, but I feel like X or Twitter or whatever the hell will be called tomorrow isn't as it used to be, with obvious evidence as to the interaction with a lot of bigger accounts these days. But regardless, we still had nearly 30 of you. So thank you for getting involved. So, of course, you can tweet us in the future at 7500 to hold. Usually it goes out a few minutes after the final whistle. It's always a good laugh. Some people go over the top. Some people are pinpointing accurate things. Some people give me the title for these podcasts. Thank you very much, because it saves me a lot of overthinking and guesswork when I'm recording in the evening. But regardless of that, let's start with USA villain. He has two, or she, I don't know. I shouldn't gender specify, how rude of me. Saying, I have two, character building win, and the second one is worried about Watkins. Aston Villa group therapy. That would be maybe a very good group for some people. Bad then good. Nigel WV, superbly successful substitutions. Simon, say that five times fast, please. Abu Dhabi Villa, crash, bang, wallop. Sarah Osborne, never leave early. Dave DeGurnier, Torres distribution, superb. Brad Wolf, last minutes destruction. Paul Waterfield, 3 minute warning. Let's go to David Bladden, goals on film. Burton villain, Duran here, bang. Simon Palmer, home comforts continue. Let's see here, plus sized volleyball dad, question mark, interesting name. Poor Sam Johnston, what a name, wow. Aussie villains, Monchi Mash, okay, these are some fantastic names. Are We Dreaming, question mark in all caps. Simon H, a great comeback. And let's do two more. We'll do Seamus, AVFC Hendo, Duran the man. And Andy O'Neill saying, van fucking tastic. So I think that's the perfect way to leave it. But Simon, I'll throw you under the bus first while I scour my mind for something creative. What's your three word review?
Just before I give mine, just listen to those. The one said poor Sam Johnston. Yeah, just brief, you want to quickly touch on that. I mean, the Palace, all their complaints about the penalty. Wouldn't have even been playing that long to get the penalty if he hadn't have spent 5 minutes pretending to be injured with no hints of any movements of a sub goalkeeper coming on from that Palace bench. Everyone knows what they were doing, and the referee allowed it to happen, but he played the extra time. So yeah, I've got no sympathy for their fans whatsoever. But so my three words: bring on Warsaw.
Fair enough. Of course, Simon is going. So, yeah, we hopefully should have him back in a couple weeks when he's sobered up at that point, I do imagine. Three words for me, and I think this will be... Well, I mean, I put this on the 7500 account yesterday. Villa have won 10 games at home in a row now. So, Fortress Villa Park. I think that is a good way to put that one, but... Simon, if I was to get your man of the match, or who would you give your match ball to in particular?
Moussa Diaby. I thought he was the best player on the pitch by a mile. You look at him, and I can't really work out why someone like Liverpool or Arsenal didn't take a punt on him a year or two ago when they were linked. I think he's just such a phenomenal footballer. That goal that he had disallowed, it's almost... it's a crime that that should be given as offside, because that the pass, the touch, the finish, like you've seen a goal of the season contender ruled out because he's got bigger boots than the last Palace defender. But yeah, Moussa Diaby, I thought he's hit the ground running and he was excellent again yesterday.
Literally, when he scored that, I just said it loud, wow, we're actually really good. I just couldn't believe it. Like, it was I don't know. Like, I felt tingles all over my back and my spine and my body because I was so happy. Anyways, that was very appropriate, regardless of that. I'm going to give it to Diaby as well. I mean, I think the one thing in this game in particular that maybe was a negative was how far and how deep he had to drop to bring the ball back up into Palace's zone, which I really at times felt like it affected Watkins and kind of bringing some players into play, because we had to really start from so deep and allowed Palace to continually set up at times. But that's Diaby's job. I mean, the fact that he literally, I know we can say Pau Torres runs things because he does with the passing and the stats prove that, but Diaby like really runs things.
Yeah,
the momentum, always looking for space, and I will always say this until we lose both Leon Bailey and him, with whatever circumstance, he is what we hope Leon Bailey would have been.
Very very quickly touch on Leon Bailey. He's had a good start to the season. Like, let's be honest, goals and assists, he's had a decent start to the season. Maybe doesn't turn up away from home, but I've been at Park, and he turned up at Hibs. So I think Bailey's done well this season when he's played. He is frustrating at times, and he's always, I think, because of how could I put this delicately, how inconsistent he can be. I think he's always going to be a very easy scapegoat to pick on. If Villa haven't played well, it's always easy to jump on Bailey. But I think, you know, let's give credit where it's due. I think he's had a really good start to the season.
Absolutely. I mean, I was very annoyed when Diaby's goal was ruled off for offside, because I have him on my FPL team. I have
season.
And he's a great differential. So I thought, oh my God, like this, I'm so glad I didn't get rid of him and make the move to James Maddison, because that's what I was going to do. Because everyone's doing that right now. And then I thought, okay, as soon as he set that third one up and then Bailey took about 60 years to take three touches and hit it, I thought, oh, I literally yelled, just hit it. So it's nice to get the assist points at least. But yeah, this is going to be a weird season for Leon Bailey. I think we're still going to absolutely dog him sometimes. And he's going to end the season with like 15 goals and like 10 assists in all competitions or something. Like, watch him be the leading goal scorer in the group stages or something.
Do you know, like, because he's like, all the talk is that his best season at Leverkusen was the year him and Diaby played together. Yeah. And like, I genuinely think, like, part of the reason why he started so well is because he's playing with Diaby again. I think they clearly have a good relationship with each other. They clearly get on with each other as well, and like, maybe that's helping to finally make Leon Bailey the player we thought Leon Bailey was going to be, and now we've got another player who we thought Leon Bailey was going to be.
Oh, don't get us too excited. Come on now.
Let's see how it goes.
They're going to end the season with 20 goals apiece. There we go.
They're the new Salah and Mane.
Yeah. Who are they? Who are they? But anyway, Simon, just briefly, because we're not going to have a Walsar. I can't pronounce it. You pronounce it for me, please. Oh my God.
Walsall.
There we go. Holy Jesus. You can tell it's morning time for me still. So thank you for that. Might as well leave that blunder in so people can jump on the abuse train for a Canadian trying to pronounce things. But regardless of that, we're not going to have a preview probably out before that. Didn't even bother trying to find a Polish journalist or anything that can speak fluent English, to be honest. They're probably more hassle trying to sort that out and make a piece of quality content than it's actually worth. So heading into that one, going over there, I know you're already buzzing for it, but I mean, going in with a lot of confidence, how are you feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to be brutally honest. My knowledge on Polish football isn't maybe what it could be. So I've got no idea if they're any good or not. Like, but I, you know, Vinish Villa should be going there and winning. Let's just be brutally honest about it. We should go there and win. But I'm really excited. Obviously, Villa's first like proper European game in 13 years. Their fans seem like an excitable bunch. Like, so it should make for a cracking atmosphere in the stand. I'll try and get some videos and like some like voice notes or whatever, and I'll send them over to the group, and you can maybe do something with them.
Oh well, thank you for being charitable. I do appreciate it. Good quality content is hard to find. Just looking up the Polish first division or whatever the hell it's called. I think it's called. This is going to be butchered, so I apologize if anyone's gotten this late in the podcast. Google is calling it the Ekstraklasa. Yeah, so that's what
if you say
it.
So.
Yeah, that's they are sitting in third, of course. They have two games on hand on some teams. Let's see here. So yeah, they're on 14 points. Let's see here. Slask Roklaw is on 16 points in first. So you'd imagine Legia is probably going to be winning that league, or at least leading it for a while, considering their goal difference is the highest in that league at +9 as well. Yeah, just looking at these names, wild names. The only one that I really can pull any familiarity out of is like Poznan.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean that's really kind of my knowledge on it as well. But all in all, if you're looking for any particular insight into who is good for them, you probably don't want to come to this space, but they have a guy named V. Kramer, Imuchi up front, Josu is how I'm pronouncing it. Ribeiro is their left back. There you go. I think that's all you need to really know on this. Let's be honest, no Villa fan's going to know anything about this side. It's just going to be a good away day. We hopefully will see a very positive result, which I honestly think we will, as I'm choking. Kind of sitting back and looking at their squad and how they've kind of been playing over the last couple of years. I think a lot of these teams we're going to come up against until you would assume we get to the knockout stage of Simon, we're going to have a good chance of probably breezing. I wouldn't say breezing. Maybe that's the rude word, but we're going to probably be winners more than losers in most of these games, you'd imagine.
Yeah, I'd like to think so. I think Altmar could be a test. You know, obviously they got to the semi-final of this competition last season. I think that'll be tricky. It's just more, it's one of those, especially going away, like especially Warsaw and when we play in Bosnia, I imagine it'll be quite a tasty atmosphere in the stadium. So it's just a case of, as long as the players deal with that, which I'm sure, you know, they'll be able to, and you know, match your opponents. It's like when you play, like, you know, like when you get in like an FA Cup or a League Cup, you've got an away tie against a lower league team, and you think just match their energy and effort, and then your quality should shine through. And I suspect that's what would be the case going into these European games.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to come up against Rapid Vienna at any time during this competition, so we should be okay. But like, it's really like, I mean, as Villa fans, this is what we've been waiting for a long time. For the likes of me and Seb, this is really the first that we can experience as deeper Villa fans, hoo-ha, hardcore, yeah. You know, part of those groups, apparently, to some. If you're not hardcore enough, you're not good enough, but regardless of that. Yeah. But, I mean, for the traveling supporters like yourself, it's all for the away day experiences, the atmosphere. Like, these are memories for a lifetime. Who knows, maybe Villa in Europe for the next 2, 3, 4, 5 forever years. I mean, we can only hope. Or maybe it's another 5 or 10. We don't know. It's just one of those things where we really have to kind of appreciate what we have, because as Villa fans, we're not that good at doing that, are we?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah, like you say, it's like it's something for years and years. Like when the last time we were in Europe, I was kind of a bit too young in terms of, like, just financially, I wasn't able to really go and do it. And then, you know, having to wait 13 years, you're like, oh, come on. But I just, all I want is to see, go to a game in Europe, seeing Villa play. And so to be able to, the fact we managed to get tickets when they went on sale to season ticket holders on Thursday, and there were still a few hundred left. my brother managed to get online and get them quickly. I'm just so excited for it. And like you said, like memories that will last with you for a long, long time. So I cannot wait.
Absolutely. Well, Simon will also be in the Netherlands for the Alkmaar game. Of course, no tickets available as of yet, I don't think.
No.
You know what? If you're listening to this in the future, or you're thinking, I want to set Simon up with some tickets, please do, so then we can have more content. If not, you will find him in Amsterdam, and he may or may not be returning home for an extended period of time. So we'll have to wait and see. And yeah, just before we were just going to finish this podcast, I realized that we didn't actually get to people's questions that they sent in on Twitter. So if you're still sticking around at this part of the podcast, which to be honest, for some of you, I'd be shocked because we've kind of gone off the rails for the last 5, 10, 20 minutes. Regardless of that, a few of you did get involved. Of course, like I said, you can tweet us at 7500 a hole. I'll try to do this more where people can pose questions and we will discuss them. I think we've discussed a couple of these a little bit, but Simon, we'll start with this. We'll get your opinion. Nick Price Thompson writes in and he's asking, is the squad now too lightweight with a sea of games heading our way?
Overall, I don't think it is. I think up front we are, like as we've discussed, you know, in terms of strikers, you've only really got two, like Duran and Watkins. So that is quite light. But we only really tend to play with one up front and one off them. But I think, and the rest of it, I think we're reasonably well set, to be fair. I mean, obviously, the Mings injury and the Brendier ones, you know, we're without them for the rest of the season. But Ramsey will be back pretty soon. Morelos back in training. I suppose Diego Carlos, there's been no real words at all about what's happened with him, what's wrong with him, how long he's out for. But, you know, midfield options, we've got quite a few midfield options. You know, obviously Dendonka's back fit now. Has, you know, come on briefly in the last few games. So, I'd say that in general, I think we're reasonably well set, maybe just a little light up front. Then, you know, Zaniolo can play off the striker. Diaby can play through the middle off the striker. You can play Bailey through the middle if you want. You try your way, sir. I think we're probably okay. You always want, every football fan always wants, you know, that extra or just one or two more players and we'd be set. And like every single fan says that at the end of every transfer window. So, I think we'll be okay. We don't need any more injuries, though. Like, I think we've had enough of them, but I think we're all right.
Yeah, I do too. I think, like, I mean, and as Villa fans are probably used to this now, I mean, the only concern is probably if Ollie Watkins goes down, what happens? But I mean, Duran's producing, like you said, Diaby can play up there. I mean, you do have Captain Chaos that can maybe get into the mix a little bit, and Leon Bailey too. Like, there's ways to compensate for it as well. We're scoring more as a committee, and we have been for the last couple seasons now consistently. So I think that's what we're going to have to expect going forward. And it's not really a bad thing. I'm more concerned for teams that have one player scoring all their goals than a team that has four or five, six players scoring. So at the end of the day, it's honestly a good sign more than anything. Because, I mean, we've seen Villa sides lean on one player in the past in a number of cases. I can think of Benteke with the massive draw against QPR when he basically scored all those goals. basically kept us up for, what, three seasons, essentially.
Right, yeah.
We can, of course, think of Grealish. And, I mean, there's players before that, too, probably as well. So, anyways, that's that. Let's go to Quinn here. We've kind of discussed this a little bit, Simon, but he's asking, or basically stating first, some teams will come and do what Palace did to us, sit in, and it's up to us to break them down and not get caught on the counter. Will we see this a lot more, especially against lower half league teams coming to Villa Park?
Yeah, 100%. My brother and some of the people that we sit around, we were saying this as the second half is going on, like this is what we're going to see. Like, I think people now are sort of really recognising and appreciating that we're actually a very good football team now, which it's been so long since we've been able to say that. And yeah, I think we've got so many good players that can hurt opposition teams. We are going to see, definitely, I'd say the majority, more often than not, of our home games, we'll have teams doing what Crystal Palace does, because there's only six teams who finished above us last season. And, you know, so you'd expect all of them, maybe, you know, someone like Chelsea or Tottenham, when they come to Villa, will come and have a go. But I think everyone else, you look at the Everton game, you know, Everton are a poor team, and they came out and they tried to press us, and look what we did to them. And, you know, I think Crystal Palace and other teams will have looked at that and thought, Christ, if we go at these and open ourselves up, we could get hammering here. So, yeah, but yeah, it's up to us to break them down. And that's where what we were talking about earlier about being patient and sticking to the game plan. Like you said, and you're quite right, you can see why people get frustrated when they're watching, thinking, why are we doing the same thing? It's not working. But it's having that belief that it will work if you keep doing it. And you look at the first half yesterday, you know, as we've said before, we should have probably been 3-0 up at least at half time. And that was from doing that. That was from playing the way we play. Like, it does work. We create the chance just to take them. So, yeah, it's something that we're just going to have to get used to. But I think we're more than capable of breaking teams down.
Yeah, to be honest, I feel like at this rate, Chelsea will sit back against us because they can't do anything right. They're just brewing against Bournemouth today. So, no offense to Bournemouth, but I think Chelsea are aiming a lot higher. Well, at least their crazy owner is. It's mental that they have one win to their name. But anyways, that's them in the mud. One more here, and then we'll jet off, because this has been more than long enough. So if you are listening, like I said before, this long into it, we do appreciate it. And if you do, tweet us and let us know that you are this far, because I mean, it's good for the soul. Regardless of that, let's go to Abu Dhabi Villa asking, have we seen the last of Cash as a high wide right in home games? Quite apparent against a poor Palace that he hasn't got the attacking prowess when we're dominant, and we really missed Bailey in that wide right space. In brackets, he puts, never thought I'd say that.
I understand where he's coming from with that, in that maybe he didn't have his greatest of games, but you know, he got into position to score twice. I mean, obviously, you know, his poor finishes with his left foot and the header, and he did put in a great cross that Watkins probably should have gotten the end of. So there were some good things that he did in that game, and you know, let's not forget a couple of weeks ago, playing in a sort of high right back position, he scored twice at Burnley. So I wouldn't say it's maybe necessarily the last that we'll have seen of it. It didn't quite go to plan yesterday. Maybe it will next time. So,
well, exactly. He's getting on the end of chances. It's just finishing them. I think he has it in him. I mean, he was a winner at one point in his career. I just think because of how deep he's playing at times, and of course, right backs aren't taking shooting drills like a striker is. I think he will score more. I mean, at the same time as saying that, Leon Bailey, as much as he's scored a few goals this season, has been probably more inconsistent historically since joining Villa. So,
I mean, what would say about that question? To be fair, there is a valid point to it, and we were saying it yesterday, is that especially in the first half, There was a number of times where Cash was like that sort of out ball, you know, Torres sprang out to him. And you kind of, you almost wanted a right back who, when the ball comes to him, his first touch is forward and driving into that space. It did seem like he was always trying to cut back or looking for someone to play a ball back to, where there were, for example, say if it was the other way around and it was, you know, Diego Carlos spraying it out to Moreno on the left. You know, that first touch is 10 yards in front of him and he's running onto it and driving into the box. And Cash didn't do that when there was opportunities yesterday. So I do understand. I do understand. I think there is some validity to the point that was made, but maybe slightly reactionary to say, oh, is that the last we're going to see of it?
Yeah.
But I get where he's coming from.
Yeah, I don't think it is, just because of the way the schedule is running and how thick and fast it's going to come.
Yeah,
you're going to see players in positions that we're probably going to question a little bit. But I mean, we saw that with Cash and he scored two goals. So at the end of the day, there is proof in that pudding, whatever kind of pudding it is.
All we need to just remember is just let's just have full trust and faith in Unai Emery. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah, he makes a good pudding. So
now that's how you end the podcast.
That is how you end the podcast. The second attempt at this, you guys won't be hearing the first one, but regardless of that, we will leave things there. Thank you all for listening. It's greatly appreciated. Like I said at the very start, if you're listening and you're not subscribed on whatever podcasting platform you're listening to, be sure to subscribe, leave a review. It's always nice. A nice review, too. That's appreciated as well. And of course, you can find Mr. Simon O'Regan on X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it, at Cy O'Regan. You can tweet me or X me at Talk Aston Villa. What a stupid platform name, but anyways. Of course, at 7500 Holt is the Twitter handle as well. If you want to send any thoughts, questions, concerns, whatever into the podcast, you can email us, holtcast@gmail.com. Just make them very nice and polite, please. Of course, if you want to write anything for the website, contribute, throw a piece on there to get your thoughts, express your opinions, pose questions, and interact with other Villa fans, of course, you can email that to 7500toholtmain@gmail.com. I don't think I left anything out. If I did, I do apologize. Oh, yeah, www.7500toholt.espnation.com is the website as well. That would be helpful. You can tell I'm doing this earlier on a Sunday than later, so my mind still is a little frazzled, but we'll leave it there. And don't forget, up the Villa. We're going up.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.